Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Back to the Tennis Connected Studios for October 8th, 2018. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here this week to preview the Shanghai Rolex Masters. This week's podcast is brought to you by Grand Slam Tennis Tours. For anybody looking to get down to the Australian Open in mid-January, make sure to hit them up for all your ticket and traveling needs. Parsa, my friend, it's been a while, it's been a minute. Back in action, my friend. Ready to preview Shanghai, talk about what's happened so far since the end of the U.S. Open. It seems like so long ago, eh? Seasons change, it gets cooler. I know New York was still rocking. It was good weather today with you guys. Here it was terrible, fighting through some rain, you know, stuff like that. But it is what it is, and the tennis season keeps moving on. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, weather-wise, it's been unbelievable here in New York.
Yeah.
And it's going to continue to be, I guess. You know, tennis-wise, everything's in Asia. It's a little further away, a little bit, you know, you have to really pay attention and turn the TV on and seek out what's happening because it's on the other side of the world. So tennis-wise here in New York, a little bit of a letdown after New York, after the U.S. Open. It's kind of normal. By the way, I loved getting ripped on Twitter. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah.
You know, some people coming after me again, and similar to Djokovic fans.
Yeah, yeah.
We got the anti-Serena fans that love to just be anti-Serena. So it's very, very interesting.
I enjoy the banter. Parsa, I think we've been doing this for long enough, man. The most passionate two groups of tennis fans out there, definitely Djokers and Serenas. The Fed fans, we could say, I could
it's
say
really any anti-Serenas that are.
Yeah, I could say anything, just Serena, like they will get on you for, like you could say stuff about Fed, about Nadal, you're not going to hear too much, you know, say stuff about like you've been on Dimitrov's case now for how many years, and nobody really cares too much. I mean, they care, but they're not going to come at you, right? But you say stuff about Joker, you're like this thread, this, that, what are you talking about? You know, I had this new writer, Amy Lundy, who wrote an article on Joker, and they were like, get your stats straight, this, that, what are you talking about? And it's just crazy, man. And it's interesting to see, but I guess that's, you know, they have the passionate fans behind them. But anyways, we're here. You know, we're early October. We got the Rolex Shanghai Masters on deck. It's already begun. I think some matches are underway now because of the time differential. We had a couple first-round matches in the bag. It's an interesting time of year, Parsa, because there really is a lot on the line. You know what I mean? The number one ranking on the men's side is on the line. Looks like Halep pretty much has things on the down low, you know, locked up for the women. Serena's bagged it in for the year. She said she's still trying to process everything that happened in New York. Osaka, very nice to see her continuing to play well. I know you had some concerns on that she was kind of going to fade away just based on what we've seen from other first-time slam winners. Looks like she's really the real deal, right? So we're going to talk a little bit about her. You know, and then the race to the finish on the WTA, which we got, Singapore coming up, and then the World Tour Finals for the men. And then we're going to end off the show with one of our followers here, Fat Nancy. Everybody make sure to give her a follow. She's great. She wants us to talk about what Andy Murray was alluding to on Twitter and on Instagram, where he was talking about the difference between one-handed backhands and two, and which one is more elegant and more functional, and how coaches really, you know, nowadays really get behind the two-hander and which one's really the better one. But before we get to all that action, we're going to dive into the Shanghai draw, and we're going to do it a little bit differently today, Parsa. So we're not going to break down quarter by quarter. It's relatively, like I like to call it, earlier in the season. We don't have the women here this week. We just had the women wrap up the China Open, where Wozniacki, or Wozniacki, as you like to call her, won another big tournament to follow up what she did earlier this year in Australia. Very, you know, it was a big separation between the two. But nevertheless, she got it done, won more than $1.5 million for her efforts this week. So it looks like she's solidified her top, you know, 1-2 ranking in the world. Osaka, as we said, has been playing well. Sabalenka has been playing really, really well. I mean, watch out for her. I think she's a future Grand Slam winner without a doubt for me. And I guess the next big event for the women pretty much is going to be in Singapore, so we'll get ready for that one in a couple weeks. But we have Shanghai on deck, like as a Monte Carlo, and you know what I mean, with when it's not dual. Not too many players here, but it's still a really nice draw. We got Fed, Joker, Del Potro, Zarev, Cilic, Team Anderson, and Nishikori as the top 8 seeds, followed by Schwartzman, Tsitsipas, Edmund, Sock, who was eliminated today. I think he's, what, only 6 wins on the season. His live ranking is about $170. He's got 450 to defend at World Tour Finals, which he's definitely not going to make. He's going to play Paris, which he's the defending champion. He's got 1,000 there. If he loses first round in Paris, which at this point it's very likely, unless nobody plays like last year, I mean, the guy's going to be about $170 in the world. That's unbelievable for such a talented guy, such a good athlete, amazing racket head speed. You know, Parsa, as everybody knows, I was down at the Laver Cup a couple weeks ago in Chicago, which was an amazing event. I can also touch on that, but
some people got on you about that on Twitter.
Yeah, but
we don't have it here, blah blah blah, what's the big deal?
Yeah, which is crazy, because you know what, like, this is a legitimate tournament. If you, Parsa, just, you know, you, if you were there, and other people were as well too, I'm not saying you were on the event, but I mean, just the signage and how much effort they put into it. I mean, there was like, The place looked like it was made for the Laver Cup. They had a temporary stadium outside for the practice courts, the shuttle services. Everything was like right on the screws, man. You cannot put together a better event than that. Just the access, you know, the press conferences, the insight I got from Fed, from Kyrgios, some amazing stuff that I can share during this podcast. But I mean, if every event can put in on an event like that, even Masters 1000s, they would be lucky. I'll tell you that much, man. I mean, they did a fantastic job. Next year, it goes back to Switzerland, and we'll see how it unfolds there. But, I mean, I think for this event, we're just going to kind of break down, you know, some impressions of the tournament. We got, obviously, Fed here, who's the defending champion. He flies in. We got Joker, who's really, I mean, the odds-on favorite to end number one. No points to defend. We know that he's dynamite this time during the season. And will we see a Federer-Djokovic final? Let me go first. I'm just going to give an overall preview of what I think. Obviously, we talked about Sock a bit. Nishikori lost today to Medvedev, which was a shocker, in his backyard in Japan. Del Potro lost to Basilashvili. I mean, he was completely out of sorts in the finals today, so he's coming in as a third seed, playing really well. We know we got Thiem, who won in St. Petersburg a couple weeks ago. Cilic, who's trying to find some form as he creeps closer to they're in the Davis Cup final, right? Croatia and France, is that correct? Yeah, so he's gonna get ready for that. Zarev had a very early loss. He's a little bit out of sorts, I think. Anderson, the, you know, the consummate professional, and then we got Joker. For me, I mean, it's interesting, right? Like, is Joker at top form? No, but is he good enough to win this tournament? Absolutely. Who stands in his way? For me, I mean, can we see potentially an Anderson, you know, quarter there? I think so. I mean, other than that, I don't see Cilic or Zarev really pushing him here. You know, other guys, you know, Shapovalov's got Basilashvili. I think that's a winnable match for the Canadian based on the fact that, you know, Basilashvili is going to be coming in off of winning a tournament, right? So he's got, his turnover is not going to be that quick. So I don't know. I think for me, I'm going to go with Joker definitely to make the finals here. And then on the top half, maybe Stan does some damage if he gets past Borna Coric. Kyrgios is there. I'm not sure how committed he is this time of the year. And then Delpo could definitely do some damage. And I'm not sure. I mean, Nishikori maybe. But I think right now, If I'm having to pick two guys to make the finals here, I'm going to go with Joker and Delpo, with Djokovic winning in maybe straight sets, like 7-5, 6-4. I think other, you know, storylines we definitely want to follow is how Fed responds here. He's got a lot of points to defend. I think he's going to have a decent draw, but he loves these courts. I mean, if they're playing quick, I think they are. That really suits them. But it's another year, right? Like, how many more Masters 1000s does he have in him? I'm not sure. I mean, a lot of people are going to email me or messages and saying, what are you talking about, man? This guy's... But how many... Like, he hasn't really won a big tournament since the Australian Open, right? Like, what... You know, he won Stuttgart, which was a cupcake draw. He lost in the finals of Indian Wells. Lost early in Miami. Didn't do much really during the summer. You know, he got destroyed by John Millman in the humidity of New York. Played the Laver Cup. Played really well there. I give him credit. He played amazing there. I mean, he destroyed Kyrgios and he had some good matches. But I don't know. I mean, I just have this feeling like he's not done. I'm not saying he's completely done. But I think he's going to have some trouble here. And even a guy like Milos or Nishikori, I think will test him here and give him some problems. So for me, I'm going with Delpo, Djokovic, with Djokovic as my winner. How about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I have a couple guys that I think are interesting in the top half. Obviously, Federer is Federer. but I find Nishikori and I find a rested Dominic Thiem also very interesting. And I think there's a little bit of an improvement happening from Thiem in terms of you know, his fast court play. I think he's sort of figuring out what he needs to do in order to be successful. And I think his draw here is actually pretty reasonable. Delpo, you know, having a final the previous week, I think is going to hurt him. Ultimately, I think that's why he'll end up losing to, let's say, somebody like Stan Wawrinka or Borna Coric. So I'm going to have it's going to be a Federer team semi for me, and I'm going to have very difficult to choose. Everything in me wants to say team is going to get the upset there. I don't know. I think it's probably going to end up being Federer, and there's just no question in the bottom half who's going to get there. It's Djokovic all the way. He's going to be number one in the world when all is said and done at the end of this year. And I think this is going to be one of the places where he picks up a ton of points. I think I'm going to go with Djokovic over Federer in the final and on to the next one.
Do you think, Parsa, I mean, even at this level, I mean, there's so much pressure, money, all of this stuff. I mean, guys like Fed and Djokovic, I don't think money's obviously a big issue for them, even though nobody wants to play for free. But when Joker's coming in here with in form with 0 points to defend, and then you have Fed coming in here with all of the points to defend, does that make a difference at this stage?
I'm not certain that it does for either of them.
Yes.
I think it's about going out and performing at a high level. You know, Federer is definitely not thinking about the money.
Yes.
Because he makes a ton more off court than he does on court.
Yes.
But I think there's that illusion that he has to continue to perform at a high level, otherwise he doesn't belong out there.
Yes.
So I think you know, inevitably he will lose that battle, he will fight tooth and nail to keep it off, you know, for as long as he possibly can.
You know, it was one of the most amazing things I heard throughout the Laver Cup when I was there a couple of weeks ago. They were asking Federer about the next generation and why they haven't broken through and got to the stage where these guys are at. And then he made an amazing... I mean, look, Barca, I've been to a ton of tournaments. I've, you know, seen Federer in so many different press conferences. And he said something that he's never said anywhere before. I don't know. You never know with him, right? Because he's such a student of the game, such a calculated guy. And he gives you the good stuff. You know, it's his, obviously, event and everything. And he said something amazing. And I'll share this because it's super important. And he said, they asked him, why hasn't anybody else broken through? Like Zverev, these younger guys. And he said, listen, you got three, you know, potential, arguably greatest of all time players in himself, Djokovic and Nadal, all playing during this era, all with completely different game styles. For one of these guys to come through and beat all three of them in the same tournament to win the tournament hasn't been done and probably won't be done, right? Like, who can you say, Parsa, with confidence right now that's going to go into a tournament and beat Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic to win the title. You know what I'm saying? It's really hard, right? And this is why it hasn't happened, because you can't go through. Now, we know that stuff happens, draws break up, guys get injured, stuff like this, right? But for the most part, it's very hard, and it doesn't, because like Djokovic is still not that old. Nadal's obviously beat up, but he's still there. Federer is older, but he's such an, you know, a smooth, iconic guy that he's still holding on at 37, that it's just been so hard for like a Dimitrov or a Milos or a Nishikori or even younger guys like Zverev, or, you know, to come up and win these events, because it's like, how do we get past all of these guys, right? It's just like one roadblock after another. And it was amazing for me to hear that. And, you know, one other thing I want to add, and it's kind of unrelated, but is important because I'll forget otherwise. And it was Nick Kyrgios, and he made a great point too, because we know the struggles that he's gone through, and he's talked about how, you know, tennis is hard for him. And they were like, you know, I got to get ready to go to Asia, and that's going to be really hard. But if every week was like the Laver Cup, you know, he goes, I would be 100% dialed in. I think, and I was talking to some of my colleagues there, and, you know, if tennis was more of a team sport, I mean, both of us know this from our coaching ranks and everything, that, you know, kids are out there, it's more of an introverted environment, you got to fight for yourself. But if you have a team like in volleyball or baseball or soccer or football or whatever, these, you know, these sports that are very big in the States, or hockey in Canada, you know, there's that team spirit, and you got, you know, people to talk to. You go out there, you talk about boys and girls and what's going on, latest video games and whatever, all the stuff that teenagers talk about. That's fun, right? But when you're out there by yourself hitting a tennis ball, that can get, unless you're super dialed in like Milos was when I saw him when he was a kid out here, or Dennis, it's tough, right? Because there's so much pressure and all of this stuff, and you kind of feel alone. And that's what basically, you know, Nick was talking about, right? And it was very genuine, and he's a good guy. And he doesn't feel it, man. He doesn't feel the one-on-one stuff, but he loves the team environment. So that's why, for me, the Laver Cup was an ultra-successive tournament. I don't care what you want to call it, an exhibition, this or that. At the end of the day, it was a successful tournament that was entertaining and competitive. And for that reason, they should definitely keep it going, and there should definitely be more of it. And we'll see if the new Davis Cup format next year. I know so many people are against it. Heritage, this, that, history. But things evolve, right? And they got to get better. And that's why I think that these type of initiatives are definitely, you know, good for the game. I don't know if you have anything to add towards that overall.
Oh, it's very well said. Yeah. I absolutely agree with everything you're saying. And, you know, moving forward, it's very important to have the just the opportunities continue to be there for change and to continue to improve the product and the sport. I think there's been more of late. There's definitely been more talk of late. And I do think that a team aspect will probably bring more players to actually play the sport. So clearly, the, you know, for those who didn't get a chance to watch Laver Cup, it was hysteria. Every day was incredible. Fans were incredible. Everyone was engaged. You know, there was genuine emotion happening, and it was different to see these guys root for each other as they always play against each other. So it was interesting dynamic, and I think it brought out the best in everybody, and you could feel the tension and the passion through the TV screen. So definitely something to continue to watch for, and change is a good thing, and let's see what happens.
Yeah, and, you know, they had 93,000 people over 3 days. I mean, what else do you want, right? And those were not cheap seats, man. So, like, you're getting people out there. You know, Chicago's a great sports town. I mean, probably my top 3-4, you know, cities in the States to visit. So, I mean, it was just bang on from one end to the other. Okay, Parsa, before we lock it up for this week and get ready for our review for next week, you know, we're talking about the backhand. Conversation here. So we got one-handers, we got the elegant, you know, the Stan Wawrinkas and the Richard Gasquets and the Roger Federers, and now Denis Shapovalov doing those scissor kick one-handers. Would you rather see that? Or do you want to see a guy like David Nalbandian or Andre Agassi, or, you know, some of the good two-handers that are out there today, like even Rios when he was back in his prime, Andy Murray, Novak Djokovic? Or what do you prefer? I mean, from a coaching perspective, definitely I think the way to go is two-handed backhand, one-handed slice. That's my opinion. Does a one-hander look more elegant? Maybe. I don't think, actually, I wouldn't say maybe. It definitely does. But from a functionality standpoint, day in and day out, return of serve and just consistency, you know, you hit a ball a little bit late. You want to have that second hand on the racket, right? I mean, how many coaches are going to go out there and teach a one-hander at this stage unless the kid is super talented and can just wax the ball, you know, as you've seen, right? You know, you've had some kids where you've had brothers and one of them was a two-hander and then the next guy comes up and you're like, no, this guy needs to be a one-hander. He just has what it takes, right? And so obviously you have that feel, but where, you know, I think that's obviously a coaching call and the kid will kind of show you that they have what it takes. But when it comes down to it, what do you think is the better stroke?
I think the two-hander is the better stroke. I mean, yeah. You can defend better. You can dish out power better.
Yes.
And you just have more access to energy, to power. And yes. So I think, you know, in a shorter, more compact swing, so you can repeat it a lot. You know, I think that's sort of a function of how the stroke is, you know, but you have to be very, very talented for a one-handed backhand. And the people who can hit it really, really well, it's an incredible thing to watch. There's no doubt about it that it's graceful and beautiful. And I think we'll always be a part of the game because there will be those kinds of players. And, you know, just it's very, you know, the one-hander can also create some angles and can create a little bit more feel because you hit with one hand more. So your slice is usually a little bit better. But at the same time, it can be a liability. If someone can really heavy you to that side, it can really pin you to that side, you're in a lot of trouble.
Yes.
It's very hard to get out of. You have to have a certain strength level to be able to fight off the ball. I think it makes the equation very easy having the two-hander. There's known problems, and you can find the solutions pretty actively and get better at it.
Yeah. The game is so fast now, and it's like you got to be an incredible athlete to be able to defend how Federer used to, where, you know, I remember back in 07, 08, 09, I would go to Indian Wells, and I mean, he was just hitting these off the rise, you know, dip, like defensive backhand flick passes. I mean, okay, well, that's Roger Federer, right? Like Gasquet, I was watching him play in Japan earlier this week. I mean, the guy's just hammering his backhand still. Dan is, you know, he's got it. You know, Dennis is hitting some great ones. Tsitsipas is another guy with a nice one-hander. Definitely good to have that, the variety, exactly. That's what I was looking for, the variety between the two. But day in and day out, if you're building a player and you want to build a champion of this era, you definitely got to go with two. And that's, I think that's pretty much, you know, yeah. What I think we would both agree on that. So, I mean, with that said, Parson and I will be back next week to wrap up the Rolex Shanghai Masters and then get ready to move to Europe, where we got Paris World Tour Finals as well as Singapore. And then we got some time off before we kick it back up for the Australian Open. And with that in mind, for anybody looking to get down to Australia, make sure to hit up Grand Slam Tennis Tours for all your ticket and traveling needs. Parsa, as always, a pleasure, my friend.
Thank you.
Everybody out there, thanks for listening. Make sure to download this podcast on iTunes. You can hit us up on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. You can, you know, follow Parsa. He's got some interesting stuff going on Twitter and on Instagram. Myself on Instagram as well at Tennis Connected. Be good. Have a great week. You know, this is obviously kind of getting to that Australian Open sleepy for the week. You got to stay up late to watch the matches, but your plan is to definitely get through them.